Hi there. Welcome back to Adventures of the Airstream Oracle. So I'm watching some of the Olympic coverage and some of the neat stories about Japan, and it reminded me that I don't think I've told you much about the time that I worked in Japan as a casting director. So this is just a total fun story today. It was early 90s, and I was doing a job for IBM. It was a big international campaign. And so the woman that I did casting for sent me and, I don't know, a 6'4" guy as my assistant. And he was one of the first really popular punk rockers in LA. His name was Chip Dill. His band was the Dills. His name was Chip Kinman. That's it. The band was the Dills. Anyway, he was really tall, and he had a huge mohawk, and he was really Nordic looking. So the cool part was, you know, he stuck out like a sore thumb, which was great. He was also a savant of some kind, because while we were on the plane flying to Tokyo, he pretty much learned some basic Japanese that got us around really well. It was just amazing to me how quickly he picked it up. I learned a little bit. Like, anytime I would go to another country, I would try to learn, you know, please and thank you and some directions and how to ask for things, just some basic stuff. Because, you know, you always do better if you try to assimilate in some ways, and especially with the polite things. And you want to learn things like, you know, when you go to Japan, and a lot of Asian countries, when you use chopsticks, you want to learn things like you don't stick the chopsticks into rice and leave them, you know, sticking out. Like, don't you set them down next to your plate or your bowl, because it's a sign of, like, someone has died, and you're either showing them deference, or it's a tribute to them to stick your chopsticks in a rice bowl. So it's kind of an affront to do it, you know, in public. That's my remembrance of it. I just remember don't do that. But what's really funny, the thing that I was watching this morning that made me laugh is, you know, I've talked to you a bunch about saying yes and to the universe, and, you know, just having adventures and just doing, you know, doing what you can when you can, especially when you're younger and you're healthy and you don't have things holding you back. Like, really, really say yes and just explore. And the one day that I had off by myself in Tokyo, I don't know if Chip had gone back to LA or if we just needed, you know, some time apart, but I decided to just put the business card for my hotel in my back pocket and get on the subway and go down to this place called Shinjuku Park, which was supposed to be kind of like their Central Park, and it was really cool, and there were all kinds of people there. There were, like, Japanese people doing rockabilly, and there were some punk rockers, and there were kids there playing the blues, and they were all dressed like these little subcultures. It was really cute. But I also decided that day to just explore and do some stuff, you know, that I never would do. But I always like to, in new places, go to a department store and a grocery store to just see what the foods are, what the things are that they use, what their daily items are, you know, in their daily life. So I went to this 4 or 5 story department store and poked around, and half the stuff I had no idea what it was. It was so cool. And then I got to one level, and it had a bunch of stuff, and that's what made me laugh. I'm looking at a visual of this. It's on the Today Show, and it's sampling a popular Japanese snack. Well, if there's no English on the package and it's only a visual and you think you know what you're getting, I went found this entire display of hard candies that looked really, really good. So I grabbed, you know, a whole bunch of different packages of things, and I brought them home to my dad. Well, it turned out I thought it was cool Japanese candy, but it was really weird flavored hard cough drops of all different kinds, like anchovy flavored cough drops and just interesting, weird, strange things. But, you know, I was proud of my dad because he opened up different things and tried stuff, but he's like, honey, this is not candy. So his trip snack or his trip gift from the other side of the world was something very bizarre. But that day was really cool too, because I had never had sushi before, and so I went to one of their corner food trucks and got a bento box. I thought, well, that looks interesting. There's a whole bunch of different samples of things. I don't really want to know what it is. I just want to try it and see if I like it. And the woman that sold it to me spoke just enough English to kind of point out to me the order in the box that you're supposed to eat it for like umami and the flavors in your mouth and the taste buds and how you digest it and everything. So I ate it, you know, in the order that I was supposed to. And I don't know what all was in there, but I liked it all. You know, knowing sushi now like I do, I'm sure it was eel and, you know, all kinds of stuff. But it was really good. I got a little thing of sake. And I looked across the street and there was a kabuki theater. And so I decided to go across the street for an hour. And kabuki lasts all day, so I knew I didn't have all day to do it. But I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go in for an hour and experience it. Like, I just want to see, you know, what this is like. And, oh my God, y'all, it was really cool and really weird and really over the top and really ancient. And the energy was so amazing. And the costumes were fabulous. And the way the people cheered them on, it was just, it's just something that you just have to experience in person. It was so cool. But it was just, Japan was a beautiful place to visit. But interestingly enough, I'm not sure I'll ever go back, because energetically for me there was also a real coldness and a real distance to a lot of the people that we worked with. And I never connected like I did, you know, when I was in Thailand. It was amazing. It just felt like the Texas of Asia. They were warm and friendly and outgoing and just made you feel at home. But it was the opposite in Japan for me. And I don't know why. There just was a disconnect and an inability to, I'll be honest, it felt like they didn't want us there to work, which I didn't understand. But it may just be a cultural thing, maybe just a, you know, back then, maybe just a disconnect from Americans. Maybe it was just the way they are as a people, you know, in their own country. Who knows? But, you know, it just energetically was not the right fit for me. But it was beautiful and fascinating and ancient and gorgeous, and the, you know, the temples that I was able to walk past and see were just awesome. And, you know, there was karaoke everywhere, and it just, it looked like, it just looked so futuristic. All the lights and the architecture and everything, and you would walk past a restaurant, and since, you know, back then a lot of stuff wasn't in English. I'm sure certain places it was, but where we were, you know, everything was in Japanese. And so you didn't know what the menu items were. You just would look at it and be like, okay, that looks like eggs, and I'm not sure what that is. But they had basically fake food mock-ups of every menu item in the front window of a lot of these restaurants. So it was really kind of cool. You could sort of look and piece together, okay, that's a rice bowl and that's got some stuff, and I guess we'll just, you know, sort of figure out what that is. But we went also on an afternoon that we had some time off, we went to the fake food bowl factory to see how all the fake food was made for all the restaurant windows. You know, and that was really interesting. But the cool part too is we were casting, like I said, for a big IBM international campaign, and the people that were the casting directors in Tokyo, a couple of them were bilingual, but a couple weren't. We had a translator, and we had some of the biggest names in the acting world come audition for us. And it was so cool. You could tell who was the really big deal. Like, I mean, we were having the Harrison Fords of Japanese actors come in to see us, to put on tape. And I mean, the level of the bow that they would give these people that came in, the level of respect in the bow that they gave these people was just fascinating. I mean, it's the subtleties and the beauty of how they interact with each other and their traditions was just amazing to watch. And I think I may have told you some of this, you know, in a past episode. I apologize if so, because of my Lyme and mold and just the way my brain works. I can't remember a lot of times what I've told you and what I haven't, but it was a really amazing experience. So if you've never gone to another country where you don't speak the language and it's really different from what you've grown up with, do that. Go and explore and just soak up the tradition of these things. And don't just do touristy things. Like, I always ask, you know, where do the locals eat? Where do you like to go to shop and do things? And so I always tend to stay away from the tourist traps and the, you know, the touristy restaurants. Like, you know, when I was in France, we would always ask, like, you know, where do you guys eat? I don't want to go somewhere that costs three times as much and has Americanized versions of, you know, of French food. I want to go where you think a meal is good. You know, same as when I was in Italy. Like, show me where your family eats, because that's the really good stuff. And now, you know, with all these apps that you can, you know, they'll translate for you on your phone. So you literally can say what you want in your phone and just show it to somebody or have it speak it to them. So that, like, there's no disconnect anymore on reaching out and connecting with people and exploring. So if you haven't had a chance to do that and you have the financial means to do it, or if you're younger and are able to, you know, do youth hostels and travel on a budget that way and explore, please do it. I swear that's the biggest part of what opened my body, mind, and spirit and soul up to joy and understanding other people and just finding the beauty in how other people live, and just understanding that we're all so much the same, but the packaging that we come in and the, you know, the social norms and the just the historical ancestry of what we've come through, that's the part that's different. But, you know, fundamentally, we're all so similar. And you find that out when you travel. You realize that we're just a big global family. It's just the surface stuff looks different. But I started laughing this morning, you know, seeing those Japanese snacks, because, oh, you should have seen my poor dad's face when he opened up and thought he was getting some really cool candy, because he has a sweet tooth. And that did not sit well with him. But the other part, and this is not such a happy thing, it's important to do research when you're going to go to a country. I got thrown into the job really quickly when I went to Tokyo. I didn't do any research on what was happening in the news there, because I just, you know, I was younger, I didn't think to. And the day off that I was running around on the subway and, you know, knew what my stop was, I knew how to get back. I'm on the subway and I've got a backpack and I've got an umbrella because it was supposed to rain. And I'm sitting there, I'm wearing, you know, my walking sandals and some, I think I had a skirt on. Because I try to dress a little nicer, and I don't want to look like a tacky, sloppy American tourist. Because that, we got a pretty bad reputation, y'all, in other countries, to be really honest. So I wanted to be respectful. Anytime I travel, I like to dress up a little bit. I like to look like I'm, you know, trying to show deference in some way. So anyway, I had a skirt on, little sandals, cute top, backpack, and umbrella. Well, I'm on the subway and I'm riding around and I get ready to pull the cord, I guess, or I know it's my next stop, and I'm getting ready to get off. And I look over and there's this beautiful, beautiful little Japanese woman, and she's in a full kimono. I mean, she just is gorgeous. She just looks, you know, like the classic beautiful Japanese little woman, a little bit older. And she looks over at me and I smile at her and she just goes completely white. Like, all the color leaves her face. I'm like, okay. And that kind of threw me. And so my stop comes and I get up and I start to get off. And I realize I left my backpack. I had my umbrella in my hand and I left my backpack. And I go back to get it. And the sweet little woman starts screaming at the top of her voice, looking at me and shrinking away from me. Well, and a few other people, you know, on the train start acting the same way and getting weird, and they run over to her, and I had no idea what I had done. Like, so I grab my stuff, I get off, and I, you know, I'm like, what the heck? And so the next morning, I talk to my interpreter. I'm like, I don't know what I possibly could have done to, you know, have upset that woman, but she looked like she was terrified of me for some reason. And she said, okay, well, show me, you know, tell me what you had on and what you were doing and where you were. And, you know, so I walked her through it. I'm like, I was on the subway, had my leg crossed. I got up, I had my backpack, I had my sandals, I had my umbrella. And, you know, I start to get off, I explain it all to her. And she looks at me and she looks at, I have a little Om tattoo on my ankle, which is, it's a lot of things. It's an ancient Sanskrit symbol. It's one of the original spiritual symbols. It's the symbol of body, mind, and spirit in harmony. It's also how you measure energy. It's the, you know, you measure energy in ohms. It's just a sacred symbol to me to remind me to keep everything in balance. I've had it on my ankle for like 30 years. And I showed her, you know, how I was sitting with my leg crossed, and she looked at me and she said, okay, you had a backpack and you had an umbrella and you had the ohm on your ankle. Oh, okay. So what was it? She goes, oh, she just thought you were trying to kill them all. And I looked at her, I was like, what do you mean I was trying to kill them all? And she goes, well, what's happening right now is we have a cult called the Om Sheeran cult, and they do sarin gas bombing attacks on the Japanese subway. They usually have a backpack or a bag of some kind and an umbrella, and they stab the backpack with the umbrella and then hop off the train and gas everyone to death. So I said, are you kidding me? Like, I had no idea. And she goes, yeah, and you have an Om on your ankle. That's the symbol that they appropriated for their cult. Just like the swastika used to be a Native American symbol and has beautiful, rich, ancient spiritual symbolism to it until the Nazis took it over, you know, and have made it the horrible thing that it is now. But so this beautiful Om on my ankle, you know, was absconded by these horrible people. And so that poor sweet lady and everybody on the train thought I was trying to kill them. Because she said, oh, also they tend to hire from time to time, what'd she say? What's the word? Gaijing, which I think is the word for non-Japanese people. They hire them to do that bombing. And so this poor woman thought that I was basically a hired assassin with the Om on my ankle trying to kill them all. Now, how would a girl from Bedford, Texas, you know, middle of nowhere, population 20,000 people maybe, you know, when I was, it wasn't even that much when I was growing, it was probably 10,000 people. I didn't know that. I had no idea. I didn't know to watch the news. I didn't like the news back then. I was, you know, in my 20s and I didn't pay attention to world events. You know, and that's not something I guess they publicized a lot, you know, in our hotel and around, and nobody knew I'd be on the subway. But, you know, I looked at the my poor interpreter, and she was real blasé about it, real, and that was the interesting part. Like, she didn't show any emotion, and I think that was part of my disconnect with them energetically, is I was like, could you show some emotion? But the fact that poor little lady on the subway, you know, screamed in terror at me, that's some pretty big emotion. So obviously I scared the living hell out of her. So I felt so bad, y'all. Immediately after she told me that, I went to that department store again and I bought ankle socks, and I wore these really uncomfortable little shoes that I had for the rest of the trip and covered up, you know, my ankle tattoo. And I was really careful to, if I had a backpack, to keep my umbrella inside and, you know, make sure I didn't do anything to terrorize anybody again. But I mean, that's the interesting and weird part about traveling too, is you know, pay attention, figure out, you know, where you could possibly be a threat or do something against folks that you had no concept of. But anyway, that was part of that trip. And I don't know, feels like there's more I want to tell you about that, but I'm running out of steam. But anyway, just Moral to the story is, if you get a chance to travel, especially to another country that you've, you know, I'd never really shown any interest in Japan. I just never assumed I would be on that, you know, that far away on the other side of the world. I think I told you before, in high school, I worked at DFW Airport, the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, International Airport, in one of the gift shops. And I never thought to travel. I just liked watching people. I like suitcases. I like the idea of people going places and having adventures. So I was content back then to just watch people get to go do those things. You know, and cut to 5 or 6 years later, and I'm on the other side of the world being those people. And somebody paid me to go do it because I said yes and to this really cranky casting director who had really big connections and really huge jobs with really huge budgets. And she wasn't the nicest human being in the world, but she opened up doors for me that, you know, I never, ever would have gotten to have, you know, if I hadn't said yes to her. So, you know, I got a first class ticket to Tokyo, you know, the longest flight ever on the planet. But it was first class, and it was my first time in first class. And, you know, hot towels and warm, you know, warm footies and warm wash rags and lots of care and free food and, you know, lovely Prosecco that are probably champagne at that point, you know, all the things that I just had never experienced, that level of care and travel and, you know, staying in a very fancy hotel. I was definitely out of my element, but I had to shift and, you know, let myself be okay to be in those surroundings. I had to just up level my understanding and my ability to be in those situations. And because I did, because I kept saying yes to it and not letting it shut me down, I had an amazing experience. So that's just some food for thought for today. And if you've got a chance to travel, do it. If you've got people in your life that feel shut down or fearful and you can push them into traveling and get them out of their shell and out into the bigger world, I think you're going to do them the biggest service you ever can. I know it's a little tricky right now with COVID and everything, but once, you know, once we get beyond all that, like, I'm super excited about traveling again. So, anyway, that's my story for today. Forgive me if I've told you some or all of that before. I don't remember that I have, but I just wanted to share it with you. And I, as always, I love you guys. Thank you so much for listening to me rattle on and share my world. You guys mean everything to me. Take care. I'll see you next time. If you'd like to get in touch with me, there's a couple of ways to do that. You can find me on Instagram at @airstream_oracle, or you can email me at hello@shannonpinkston.com. I do one-on-one intuitive energy work, which basically means I will read into you energetically and intuitively, and I can really quickly find what has shut you down, the places where you're stuck, any place that you're in overwhelm, or connect the dots for you on a whole lot of things that bring you joy that you might have forgotten, that can lead you to your greater purpose and what really lights you up in the world. I'm able to do that really quickly for my clients. And I also provide like sacred energy wellness support and tips, and use my medical intuition to help, you know, figure out some of the places of dis-ease and contraction in your body. A lot of my clients have called me the joy whisperer because they come into my sessions shut down and closed down and kind of contracted, and they end up leaving open and bright and sparkly and with a clearer, you know, path to their purpose and what makes their soul sing. So if any of that resonates with you, reach out. You can also find me on Facebook if you'd like to be part of my Facebook group. It's Dragonfly Energy Wellness and Empath Support. You can search for it, and we play intuitive games in there. We do a lot of energy support, and you know, I come on and read oracle cards for my group, and just do whatever I can to connect us, you know, in deep conversations and things that matter. So if that resonates with you at all, any of the above, reach out. I'd love to hear from you. And as always, thank you so much for listening.